Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the Reason Roundtable. This is the podcast of free minds, free markets, and free takes. And we're coming at you live from the Village Underground in the heart of New York City. I am your host, Peter Suderman. And tonight I am joined by my illustrious colleagues, Matt Welch, Catherine Mangu Ward, and Nick Gillespie. You guys want to say hello?
Howdy.
Hello.
Hi.
Happy Tuesday. We're so thrilled to be here tonight with all of you in New York City, despite the whole, you know, socialism thing. We're going to talk about that later. So like I've been saying on the podcast, we came here to talk about the news and to answer your questions. And we're going to answer a lot of those questions at the end of this podcast. But if we don't get to your question, don't worry. You can always ask us in person at the after party over drinks. That's important, right? It's at Three Sheets. It's just upstairs and next door. And I'm also supposed to tell you before we get going here that we have a very hard out at 7:30. A very hard out. You got to get out when we're done. So when we are finished up here, pay your bill and come up to the bar. And if it's 7:29 and I start talking about Star Wars, you all have permission to come up here and clock me. I promise it will not violate the non-aggression principle.
Woo! Oh, sorry. Did I get too excited about that?
Oh, I know it gets Catherine excited. On stage, it's clocking me. That's right. Okay, so we're here in New York City, and we're going to talk about Zoran Mamdani. I come from D.C. I am just like a simple Beltway cocktail party caveman. I'm not a New Yorker, but I have a theory, and I want to share it with you all. My theory is that Zoran Mamdani and Donald Trump are actually kinda the same guy, but in reverse, right? So like Zoran Mamdani is a socialist and Trump is an America First nationalist. But Mamdani's theory of the economy is price controls for everything. And Trump's theory of the economy is tariffs on everything. Mamdani wants government run grocery stores, right? He wants like the city of New York to be your arugula vendor. And that means shortages. Donald Trump wants tariffs on everything, right? He wants to tax imported tomatoes. And that also means shortages. Both of these guys are media savvy political outsiders from New York City with absolutely terrible ideas about how to run or maybe how to ruin the economy, right? Like Trump and Mamdani, when I think of them together, it's like that scene in The Dark Knight when Batman and Joker, and then Joker's like, you complete me, right? Like they're just yin and yang, flip sides of the same coin. They're both populists and they both speak to something real, I think, a deep frustration with the political status quo and the establishment choices, which means that in many ways, they are both prime examples of Thomas Massie's craziest son of a bitch theory of politics, right? You all know this. Thomas Massie was like, well, I used to think they were voting for me and my ideas. And then Donald Trump won. And I realized they weren't voting for me. They were just voting for the craziest son of a bitch in the room. And Donald Trump won first in class, right? So like that's Trump and Mamdani. They're both the craziest son of a bitch, and that's why they won. But even more than that, when it comes to their policies, they are both what we libertarians like to call statists. They both want massive government control of the economy, right down to the tomatoes and the arugula. So we're going to start with a segment named after one of my very favorite LCD Sound System songs. New York, I love you, but you're bringing me down. Let's talk about Mamdani first. He's obviously quite charming, right? I enjoyed the halal cart video, and he went on the menswear podcast where everybody had like the really big pants. It's very charming, right? But he's also somebody with a detailed and specific policy vision. So I want to start by just going down the line here and having each of our panelists tell us about one of his policy ideas and why you think it's bad. Nick Gillespie, let's start with you.
By the way, I want to point out it's 7:29 somewhere in the world. I decided to talk about Mamdani's interest in rent control and stabilization. He's talking about, and I wrote this down and almost can read it, he wants publicly subsidized, permanently affordable, union-built, rent-stabilized homes, 200,000 of them to be built over the next decade. And just to put that in perspective, recently, last year, the city completed a $132 million series of senior apartments in Bed-Stuy, not a great neighborhood, that ended up costing $1 million each. So if the city is going to make 200,000 $1 million apartments, that's $200 billion.
I thought it was supposed to be affordable housing.
Yeah, it's. I'm not sure who it's affordable for, but this is, you know, a very basic thing. Everybody knows that rent control is a problem. It creates shortages by keeping prices low. Landlords stop upgrading, dwellings and things like that. It's a bad fix. The proper fix is to unleash the market. Recently, I did a video documentary with a couple other Reason people about how Austin has decreasing rents despite increasing population because they build the ton of housing. The state of Texas and the city of Austin and the county that it's in, Travis County, makes it easy to build housing. Markets are really good at delivering large prop, you know, large things at scale. This is missing from Mamdani, as markets just don't apply in his world. And I think that would be a bad, bad thing for
Matt
New
Welch.
York.
So if you're a New Yorker like Nick and I are, not native necessarily, but live here under this regime, then there are three ways that you interact with government on a near daily basis, kind of the three S's of subways, safety, public safety, and schools. So I'll talk about schools because I kind of like to talk about schools a little bit too much in New York City. The status quo, what we're starting from, is that New York City has by far the most expensive to provide a K-12 school system in the country. It spends $39,300 per student. New York as a state is at around $36,000 pulled by the city. Mamdani, unsurprisingly for a Democratic Socialist, wants to make that more expensive, specifically by doing things like enforcing classroom size mandates in such a way that would require you to hire more teachers, wanting to keep an artificial cap on the issuance of licenses to build charter schools. Charter schools tend to be less expensive. They're not run by teachers unions as much. So that sort of funnels more kids in this direction. Also wants to give a $10,000, I forget what the term of art is, something like a respect check. A respect check to everyone who teaches.
you got to earn it.
Yeah.
Paraprofessionals. And then also wants to reverse the pension reforms that the state did in 2012, thereby giving more money to the pensioners as well. So all of that would be more expensive as a starting opening salvo. But then the real big changes that were actually kind of radical on top of that is that he's going to a place that Bill de Blasio even didn't go before, which is he wants to end mayoral control of schools. That was done in 2002 under Michael Bloomberg as a way to sort of try to rope this school system under some amount of control and some moderate reforms that have happened. He wants to end that and create a whole bunch of like co-governance structures in which the teachers unions would have a strong upper hand and all of that. The other part that's more radical is that he said that he wants to adopt all of the measures in a 2019 school diversity advisory group. This is at the height of the kind of admission scrapping mania here. So that would mean no more gifted and talented classes, probably no more specialized SAT classes or tests to get in. And also every single school within 10 years has to have the exact same demographic and socioeconomic composition as the entire city. So that would be a little bit expensive. Even Bill de Blasio didn't go there. He has signed off on this serially. So he would make an existing system, which doesn't do well by any test scores or any kind of possible measurement, make it a lot more expensive, and then throw a bunch of gobbledygook on top of that.
Catherine, take us to school. What do you have for us?
The millionaire's tax seems like a bad idea. I don't know. I mean, even Bernie is doing a billionaire's tax now, I think. And that might have something to do with Bernie Sanders becoming a millionaire, probably. But I like it pains me so, so horribly to have to say that I think that Governor Hochul has gotten this one right. Like, I don't enjoy saying those words, but she said we don't need to lose any more people to Palm Beach. And this is right. Right. Like, people will just leave. And I
it's
think
like
that
Palm
this,
Beach is a natural disaster.
Yeah. Like, we can't. Is there a ribbon? Like, what would the ribbon be? It's a it's a bikini. It's nice. The just the very, very simple logic of the kind of tax the rich, it plays great on the stump. And in New York, what Mamdani is proposing is a 5.9% top tax rate, which is more than some whole ass states. Like, that's on top of New York State. So I just like on its face, it's absurd. I would hope that New Yorkers would have the good sense to flee, or that at the very least, the city government would find a way of providing some kind of service. Like, the city is great, but the city is great because the people and the culture and the economic life here, the government would need to do something for y'all, I would think, for that amount of money.
We've been asking this question for some decades.
So I think what you're hearing here is that Mamdani, who has like gotten all of this attention for relentlessly focusing on the cost of living, is in fact, all of his proposals are going to make things more expensive, or if not more expensive, then worse in some way, right? And so I would include government-run grocery stores, just as bizarre and hilarious an idea as that is. There are, in fact, a couple of government-run grocery stores out in other states. At least one of them closed because they couldn't keep it open, right? They couldn't make enough money, right? But like, it just solves a problem that does not exist. And even if they could kind of sort of make it work, what would it resemble? Government-run liquor stores. Has anyone here ever tried to buy booze in Pennsylvania? Oh my goodness.
Heroes.
So many Pennsylvania drinkers.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. They're
the
worst.
It's the worst. You can't buy anything. You can't buy anything at all. At one point, there was like a government-run wine vending machine where the government had, like the state government, had to approve all of the different wines that could go in the vending machine. And they advertised this as like some huge, like, wow, we've licked the liquor market now. Like, look at what kind of technology we have here. It's not full-on communism. It's not, you know, socialist breadlines. But it sucks. And that's what Mamdani would bring to New York in so many ways. On the other hand, he won the Democratic Party nomination, and he won the Democratic Party nomination in part because of who he was running against. All right. I mean, have you seen the other guys? Like, any of you heard some of the stuff that they say? This November, Mamdani is going to appear on the ballot against three, I don't know how else to say this, New York weirdos, right? We've got current Mayor Eric Adams, former Governor Andrew Cuomo. I don't know if anybody saw his announcement video, I think just today. This is just the saddest thing I have ever seen in politics. And then there is former radio host and founder of Guardian Angels, Curtis Sliwa.
Sliwa.
Sorry, I'm not a New Yorker. Did I mention that? Curtis Sliwa, right? So I know some people do like him and maybe even on this stage.
Matt was once kidnapped. Did you kidnap Curtis Sliwa, Matt?
I'm a sucker for a beret. I'm sorry.
All right. No, so bad.
The funny hat guys, they strike again. All the libertarians are funny hat guys at heart. So to illustrate how interesting some of these guys are, we are going to play a game. Would you like to play a game? That's right. Guess who said it? So I'm going to read a quote, and then my three co-hosts are going to have to guess whether it was Andrew Cuomo, Eric Adams, or Curtis Sliwa. Curtis Sliwa. Oh, my goodness. I probably should have looked this up in advance, right? Okay, and whoever gets the most correct can name a future segment on the podcast or prevent one from being named, right? So, our first quote.
I think we can already do that.
You're going to have to try harder, my friend. Our first quote, who said it, is, "Just let me roam at night and I'll know where the rats are. And I'll be with my wife putting out rat colonies. Pretty soon it'll be even Steven." I really want to read this in the voice of Rorschach from Watchmen, but I'll spare you. Nick, who do you think this is?
I think it's Eric Adams.
Okay, you think it's Adams?
Yeah.
Catherine?
Absolutely Adams.
Adams.
Okay.
Hey, no, Adams.
Okay, you all think it's Adams, and it is Sliwa.
Oh!
This is Sliwa. The audience gets a point there, and no one on stage does. Curtis Sliwa,
should've asked a friend.
He was volunteering. He was volunteering to be the city's rat czar at night for free. That's a real job, and it pays $170,000 a year.
Okay, like so I said, come on now.
What is the correct headwear for that job?
Next one is, look and see what's inside your bookcases. It could be more than just books.
Adams.
Perfect place
that's
to
Adams.
Hide cocaine.
Come on, that's Adam.
We're not rookies here, Suderman. Yeah. That is okay, Eric Adams in one of the best videos. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. He's explaining to me where my 17-year-old daughter is hiding the drugs, and it's like
he right?
He was totally right. Yeah.
All right. Herman Hess books, right? Yeah.
So I guess everyone gets a point there. All right, it's tied. All right. So our third quote is, imagine what they say when they get off the train. This is New York. Looks like seven levels of hell. I'm in New York. Who do we think this is? Is this Sliwa, Adams, or Cuomo?
It sounds
Cuomo-ish.
And our audience knows all the answers.
Yeah.
I was going to guess Sliwa. I love, if I may, Eric Adams' quote about how New York City is the only city where you can see the World Trade Center's destroyed in the morning and then catch a Broadway matinee. And it's like, but you can only do it once.
Only in New York. Okay. Well, all right. So I'm going to give I think the audience is going to get to name a segment here. All right. So our next quote is, when you descend into the subway, it's a combination of Dante's Inferno, A Clockwork Orange, and Jack Nicholson in The Shining, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think AI is making that movie for us right now, but who said it? Nick?
I'm going to say Cuomo, because he's Italian, not perverted. And the Dante allusion is the giveaway.
I'm going to give it to Sliwa because it sounds a little bit smart.
Wow. I'll also say Sliwa, but I'm going to object here. This is a lot of Jim Walden erasure going on in this panel. Thank you, sir.
There it is. Is that actually Jim?
That was, in fact, Curtis Sliwa talking about how he thinks crime in New York has never been worse. And so here's our final quote. Matt and Catherine have 2 points. I think the audience has 4 and Nick has 1. So for our final quote here, which is not going to break a tie, but we're going to do it anyway. I am the pilot and you are all passengers. Pray for me to land the plane because there's no parachutes on this plane. We're all going down together.
Oh, God, yes. Wow.
I would have guessed Elliot Spitzer or Jeffrey Epstein, but yeah, I'm at a loss. I'm going to go with Cuomo.
It's got to be Cuomo. I say Cuomo.
I'm going Eric Adams.
Matt gets this one. It is Adams, your current mayor and possible future mayor. I guess making his pitch to voters. This was at a town
hall. Is this
hall
on Turkish Airlines? Or? Yeah.
Very nice. What this points soon. Out, though, is whatever else you can say about Mamdani is that he's not the problem in New York. He's a result of the problem, which is a city that is unbelievably poorly run as it is. And, so we can blame him, but he's not the cause.
Matt Welch, do you want to very briefly make your pro Sliwa case?
I think I already have a beret, and he hasn't hurt me yet. All right. Cuomo hurt me.
That's not a vote pitch. That's
Eric
like a call
Adams,
to go to therapy.
Eric Adams hurts me. He's funny, but he hurts me. And he's not. And Sliwa's not a socialist. I don't like socialism. Jim Walden over there might have something to pull me in. But no, I just can't vote for people who have actively hurt me in office. And so I'm going to vote for someone else who's not a socialist. And Red Beret is funny. He likes cats. Who doesn't like cats? Except me.
The please don't hurt 'em hammer theory of politics from Matt Welch. All right, let's talk about another guy who says a lot of crazy stuff. Our president, Donald J. Trump. It is easy, so easy to get drawn. Yeah, okay, all right. We've got some feelings about Donald Trump here, I think, right? Like maybe he hurt some of us, right? It's so easy to get drawn into the sheer weirdness of what the guy says. All of this, right? Everything's computer, right? This is all part of the Trump show. I find it kind of entertaining and kind of totally exhausting, especially since it's my job to cover all of this stuff. But it's also, I think, sometimes a distraction, especially now from the substantive policy issues. Because for better or for worse, and in many ways for worse, Trump is governing. We did a podcast earlier this year where we said, this is Trump's economy now. And people got really mad because it was like February or March. And they're saying, well, no, it's too soon. And there was, in fact, not long after that, there's a Donald Trump quote on a news show where he just goes on and he says, well, the good parts of the economy are mine and the bad parts, that's Biden's economy. Just OK, just going to say it, right?
This is also true of my editorship of Reason Magazine, by the way.
But now it's July. It really is his economy in so many ways. And what his economy looks like to me is giant budget deficits, immigration crackdowns that make hiring a lot harder and labor much more expensive.
Among other things.
And radically increased tariffs, along with a kind of maddening uncertainty about exactly what those tariffs will be and whether or not they'll be in place on any given day. So let's talk about Trump's economy, focusing on those three issues. And I want to start with the tariffs because they are in the news this week. Just this week, in fact, Trump is threatening massive trade taxes on dozens of nations, right? It was supposed to go into effect in July 9th. He bumped it out to August 1st again, but now he says that really is the deadline. Catherine Mangu Ward, tell us about the tomato tariffs.
Yeah. So here's the thing about tomatoes. Mexico is better at growing them than we are, like just as a general matter. So the whole tomato thing is a great illustration of why you have to be careful when you leave laws on the books and just kind of say, don't worry, we're never going to enforce those. Because the situation that we're in now is when I was in high school, so a long ass time ago, there was a case, went to trade court. Trade court said, hey, Mexican tomatoes are too cheap. They're dumping them. We're going to put taxes on Mexican tomatoes. And then the U.S. government said, OK, actually, we're not going to do that as long as Mexico promises to charge a lot for their tomatoes. And then over and over and over, they renewed that agreement until this day when that default arrangement fell apart. Now, first of all, tomatoes are about to get more expensive, 17% more expensive on the tomatoes from Mexico.
Donald Trump isn't going to make grocery prices less expensive after spending 2 years promising he would make grocery prices less expensive?
I don't know overall. And there are certainly some positive things to say about Donald Trump. Maybe someone could say them on the stage, not from the crowd, but
apparently,
you know what?
Melania, got questions at the end of the show, yeah, and you can come up to us at the bar.
Give it a break, Melania.
But more importantly, the tomatoes that we grow here are kind of gross. So they're the like crunchy pale ones, and they're already just more expensive. And I just think if something is going to be pale and expensive in my kitchen, it should be me. So that is just one tiny little slice of the problem with the way we are doing tariffs right now, which is we have this vast, complicated series of agreements, all of which are currently under question, most of which are going to end up with stuff actually being pricier here in the United States or worse. And I think that's underappreciated. It's not just that it's going to be more expensive. It will also be worse.
Earlier, I said that Trump's whole theory of the economy was tariffs for everything. And just to illustrate that, this week, he said that he would put tariffs on Russia at about 100% if Russia doesn't end the war in Ukraine in 50 days. Now, we would all like to see the war in Ukraine end. On the other hand, like, this is his solution to absolutely every single problem. Nick, the next thing we should talk about is immigration enforcement, right? Like, so this just, as Matt said, it covers so many sort of different parts of the libertarian agenda and way of thinking about things, right? It's a human rights and freedom issue, but it's also a labor issue with significant economic effects. So talk to us about
this. And it's also a constitutional issue as well, because how many of you think, illegal gang members, people who are here illegally, who are members of gangs or have committed violent crimes should be deported? Like all of us, right? All of us. But in pursuit of that, it doesn't mean that everybody should get picked up, including American citizens, sometime who happen to look like immigrants, and they shouldn't be being picked up by people wearing masks, which are now banned in many places around the U.S., unless you happen to be part of ICE. But there are certain sectors of the economy that are heavily dependent on immigrant labor and particularly illegal immigrant labor. For instance, agriculture, somebody's got to pick those pale, crunchy, shitty tomatoes, right? And, you know, somewhere between 40 and 50% of them tend to be illegal immigrants. And reports are coming out now because of ICE raids and things like that in California, outside of Bakersfield, 70% of workers are not showing up. This is not just bad labor policy. It is ruinous for the economy. When you get rid of illegal immigrants who have been, many of whom have been in the country for well over a decade, many of whom have legal, they're married to legal people, they have legal children, they are adding to the community. When you suck them out of the economy, virtually every analysis shows you're shrinking the economy while chasing the phantom of MS-13 members. It is not that complicated to figure out how to get the bad apples out and send them home to the countries of their origin, not to El Salvador, move from there. So it's a problem.
Matt, I'd like you to talk to us about Trump and debt and deficits, but I'd also like you to put this in context, because Trump is obviously terrible on fiscal politics, right? He added a ton to the deficit in his first term, and the big beautiful bill that just passed is going to add $3 or $4 trillion to the debt and deficits over the next decade, according to the Congressional Budget Office. But there's also some history here too. Biden and Obama helped drive up the debt long before Trump, Obama helped drive up the debt before Trump was in office. Biden kind of in between the terms here, and I actually want you to contextualize this for us with two recent New York Times headlines that I think are really telling. The first is Biden's chief economist, the chart that convinced me our debt is a serious problem. That's Jared Bernstein, the former chief economist for Joe Biden, this July. And then in May, I was Obama's budget director. It's now time to worry about the national debt.
Told you. Sorry, I added the now. It's time to read the New York Times opinion page. Peter, God.
Right.
Damn
so
it.
these guys were part of the problem, and they have left us with a huge debt overhang.
Yes, that has completely happened. Think of every Democratic president, actually Republican president too, but for the sake of argument, since we've had Democrats than Trump, that there is a crisis. Whoops, got to do this. Ratchet it up. We have to spend a bunch of money after the financial crisis or after 9/11 in George W. Bush's case. And we're just going to do it right now, but we have to do the stimulus and let's just keep it there. So then you sort of keep it there. The spending doesn't go back down again. Little tiny context. One, this year in 2025, the national the budget deficit is $1.9 trillion. That's 1 year, $1.9 trillion, and it's going to go up now that the big beautiful bill is passed by $270 billion or some estimate close to that. That's just 1 year. We are spending more money on debt service every year now than the military. It's $1 trillion on debt service. That money is just like, that's your credit card overage. I gotta pay the interest on this. That's what we're paying now, and it's more than we spend on the military, and we spend a fuck ton of money on the military, more than the next 8-9 countries combined, famously so. So Trump took the ratchet and ratcheted it more. He spent more money was spent under his first 3.5 years as president the first time around than had been debt was added to. Spending increased more than in Barack Obama's 8 years. And that was before COVID, deliberately chosen endpoints. Right now, we're spending about $7 trillion a year. In 2000, when we had a budget surplus, we were spending, adjusted for the same inflation, at 3.3. The national debt has gone from $10 trillion to $37 trillion. And it's projected to be up to $52 trillion in 10 years. And oh, by the way, in 10 years, because of all of this bad mismanagement, not even in 10 years, in 8 years, all of you people who think you're going to be receiving Social Security and Medicare, congratulations, you're getting a 23% across the board cut mandated by law. That's 2033 because we didn't solve that problem. This problem that we've been talking about for 35, 40 years, everyone used to talk about all of the time, and Trump helped seal the politics on the right to stop caring about this. Bernie Sanders and other people on the left helped seal that. So now we have two magical thinking parties who don't want to pay any attention to the reality that's coming straight for us. Trump is a very, very important part of that problem. And it's pathetic to watch people in Congress, Republicans in Congress, who were not named Thomas Massey or Rand Paul, just roll over like dogs while he does that.
Hey, Matt, how much would it cost to release Epstein's files? Would that add or increase
it's a lot of Xeroxing. Yeah. Thousands and thousands of pages. Yeah.
Those binders, are they're not free.
No amount of Bitcoin of what's the – oh man, I can't remember the scammy Bitcoin girl, right? The Hawktua coin. You don't have enough of it to pay for that. All right. The other thing we should mention while we're talking about Trump and the economy is Doge, right? So libertarians, including all of us on this stage, had, I think, high hopes for Doge. And it was, I think, to Trump's credit that he even tried it, that he put Elon Musk in charge. But the results were ultimately pretty disappointing, at least so far. And I don't think we're going to get much more. Right? Doge did enable some significant staffing reductions at federal agencies, although a lot of that is tied up in court. But ultimately, the savings weren't there. Elon Musk promised $2 trillion. And this week, as we are sitting on this stage, Congress is debating the rescissions bill that came out of Doge. So the rescissions bill is Congress signs off on the Doge cuts. $9 billion. Now, $9 billion isn't nothing, but in government spending terms, it's basically pocket change. It is very much a far cry from $2 trillion. It just didn't happen. And what is really remarkable is that if you look at the congressional politics of getting this vote across the finish line, they're already pulling stuff out of it. Trump is already having to lean on the moderates, right? Like, this is something that even a bunch of Republicans are not sure they want to vote for, this little tiny $9 billion cut. And that tells you a lot about our fiscal predicament and how we got to the place that we are at right now. Okay, so we're going to do a very, very short segment here. Very short, right? We've talked a lot about things we don't like in politics, but we do have a positive vision for the world, and so much of that positive vision is based around new technology and the great stuff that you have in life, the great innovation. So I want to go through the panel here and just have everybody tell us about one technology that is making your life better and the world a better place very quickly. Matt Welch.
Yesterday on Twitter, I complained about all the mosquito bites on my legs. And this listener, Twitter guy I've known a long time named Mark Cridland, said, "Hey, I tried this." And it was someone else who had put up a tweet, and it was farmers used to have this thing where you put hot water on a spoon. And then you put that spoon on your leg, and it kills out the protein that's reacting badly. It fucking works. It's fantastic. I can't proselytize enough. So thank you, Twitter, for allowing me to do that. That's just a way of saying we're about ready to gene splice the mosquito into the dustbin of history. That's going to be so fucking great. And the Washington Post had a headline, and I don't have the exact verbatim, but it was like, technology is going to allow us to eradicate the mosquito, but should we?
Yes!
Fuck!
Nick Gillespie, you're next.
No, I have to briefly, I know it's okay. A short segment. You have done something horrible to me that I genuinely thought the technology that you were going to describe was a hot spoon. You had me.
Kind of was.
You had me. Kind of was. 100%, Grandpa. Like. Yes. Oh, Jesus.
Nick Gillespie, this is the time when I let you know that this segment does have a title. It's Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto.
You know, thankfully, I can't hear out of this ear, so. I was thinking about birth control. Fans of birth control?
Woo!
Okay, yeah. And you know, the real fans have never been born, but vaping, GPS vaccines. But instead, I'm going with Compound W wart remover. This little thing, which cost about $6 at a grocery store, got rid of a plantar wart on the arch of my foot a couple of weeks ago. And what I was thinking about as it freezes There's a whole doohickey thing here, and then you take the frozen tip and put it on the wart, and it goes away magically. I'll show you at the after party. That's how we get you to the after party. Warts and all, we're calling it. That's the segment title for the after party. No, but my sister had a plantar wart in the 70s, and it cost like $1,000 in nominal dollars to have it cut out. She had to walk around on crutches for weeks. Compound W, nominal dollars, $5-6, no pain, all gain. This is great technology, and we multiply this type of marginal increase and improvement throughout our lives on an almost cellular basis.
I did not expect Nick Gillespie to say the words frozen tip and then somebody to yell out, "Can we see it?" Catherine, what do you have for us?
Besides your resignation letter.
You both submitted bodily bump related.
I swear we did not plan this.
Are we not human?
I hate it here. I like my Kindle.
That's not really okay. All right. The Kindle's great. I got a Kindle. I got Kindle apps on my iPads. It's wonderful. The thing that I like is anybody here old enough to remember when OCR scanning was like a huge deal and like it was just a massive headache and it didn't work.
Matt
and
remembers that with the spoon era of OCR where you just rubbed a spoon.
No more spoons.
Or silly putty. OCR of silly putty.
You can now just take a photo of something with your iPhone and it will scan the text. And this is so useful if you are, for example, a journalist or somebody who writes about cocktail recipes, because you can just go through the books with all the cocktail recipes and photograph, and then you can just search them and they're just there and there's no thinking about it. This was a feature that was added to the iPhone's camera in 2021. And I just remember like years in the 1990s of OCR messes, of it never actually working. And now it just works totally seamlessly, and it makes my job so much easier. All right. That's the vision of a better world that we have for you, I guess. Removing stuff from your body, reading things on Kindle, and taking photos of cocktail recipes. Okay, that's the libertarian future that we want. Let's talk about our cultural recommendations, as we do at the end of every podcast. So because we are in New York and because we are at the Comedy Cellar, our assignment here is to bring something that is New York adjacent and also funny. Can be a book, a movie, a comedian, a show, anything you want, but it has to have a New York element, and it has to be funny. Matt Welch, we're going to start with you.
A guy who has been on this very stage many times, I've seen him here, Colin Quinn, has a wonderful, wonderful special from 2016, directed by Jerry Seinfeld, called The New York Story, in which he gives a history of New York, or I should say a history of ethnic humor of New York, or the history through ethnic humor. And it is just great. You will learn, especially if you're an outsider like me, you will learn a lot about the history of New York. It's also about how things change. Neighborhoods go from Puerto Rican to this and that and the other. You learn a lot of really great ethnic humor. And it's a defense also of all of that humor as an important leavening, assimilation creating machine, and how there are different times in the history of New York. It's gone this direction or that direction. It is wonderful. I recommend it to everybody whenever they're like, hey, what about New York should I do? It's that and Rick Burns' New York documentary. Hand in hand, actually. They go very well. But Colin Quinn, The New York Story, it's fantastic.
Catherine Mangue Ward, what do you like about New York that's funny?
I like the New York of before I was born, the kind of New York of my imagination, which is the 1970s. And in particular, shush, Grandpa, okay. You too.
Yeah, death wish.
Radical.
It's funny. It's a comedy.
Radical Chic and the Mau Mauing of the Flatcatchers. You cannot beat Tom Wolfe. And in particular, I just reread it because I wanted to see if I correctly remembered this passage that I think about literally every single time I put on mascara, which is a lot, you guys. Like, Tom Wolfe really got in my head on this one, and it is, in fact, flawless. So Radical Chic. It's set in Leonard Bernstein's apartment in 1970. The Black Panthers are there, and it's just this like exquisitely, horrifically observed study in the contrast of the like white draperies and the Roquefort cheese balls rolled in nuts, which is also extremely 1970s, and you can't tell me otherwise. But this is the passage. He says, God knows the Panther women don't spend 30 minutes in front of the mirror in the morning shoring up their eye holes with contact lenses, eyeliner, eyeshadow, eyebrow pencil, occipital rim brush, false eyelashes, mascara, shadow band for the under eye, and a Eterna cream for the corners. And damned if I don't do that. And damned if I don't wish I was one of the Panther women of this essay. But every single sentence is like that. I really can't recommend it enough. And of course, the second essay, Mau Mauing of the Flatcatcher, set in San Francisco, it's the same stuff we're talking about now. It's the same like urban decay, elite virtue signaling nightmarescape that we live in now. It's all been done before, and Tom Wolfe wrote about it best.
Speaking of the 1970s, Nick Gillespie.
So I'm going to talk about Compound W wart removal. Because you get warts in New York. That's part of the tax of living here. Now, I'm going to recommend two Instagram feeds that are conjoined accounts. What is New York and Subway Creatures? These are phenomenal ways to, you know, kind of deal with how hard it is to live here on a daily basis. If you want to see, for instance, Mr. Met falling off the stage at a Lumineers concert, go to What is New York. If you want to see rats crawling up the legs of people who have fallen asleep on the subway and like running up the pant leg and coming out the collar.
This is why we need Curtis Sliwa, Night Rat Catcher. Yeah.
This is, you know, check out Subway Creatures, but they are an embodiment. They're crowdsourced, of course. They're beautiful, and there's a whole series of subway fountains on both accounts right now because of last night's rain, where you'll just see torrents of rain coming down stairwells or dumping through the roof or just gushing up in the middle of nowhere for no clear reason. What is New York and Subway Creatures? It will make you a little bit happy that you live in New York.
So my cultural recommendation is the movie Ghostbusters. It's a movie about academics and intellectuals with kind of quirky views about the world who become small businessmen. And they become small businessmen based on ideas that are perceived as kooky and dangerous and maybe even a little bit are. They have a rocky start to their small business. No one understands their service, but then they advertise. And it turns out there's a real market for their product. And so, of course, it's pretty soon they're successful, but as soon as they're successful, the EPA steps in and says, you can't do that. And ultimately, the EPA shuts down their technology and makes absolutely everything worse. And then after an argument, the mayor finally agrees to let a private business step in and save New York City because the public sector isn't up to the task. So I must have watched this movie 24 times as a kid, and I never had any sense that it was political. It was just awesome, and it was funny, and obviously I wanted to be Bill Murray, but really I identified with Dan Aykroyd, right? The sort of weirdo genius, but like also really emphasis on the weirdo part, right? And this is the fundamental libertarian story of the economy in so many ways. It is pro-business, pro-market, pro-capitalism, and wary of bureaucracy and bureaucratic overreach. And even more than that, it is maybe the fundamental reason story of the economy, because it's about the evils of regulatory overreach and the virtues of privatization. Like, when Zuul finally comes, you better hope that Mayor Mamdani hasn't put the Ghostbusters out of business. All right, so this is the time where I tell you about Star Wars. No, pay your tabs. Thank you so much. We will see you all upstairs at Three Sheets. Thank you so much to
everyone
here, to Matt Welch, Catherine Mangu Ward, Nick Gillespie, to the Comedy Cellar. We love being here. We love New York. This is a great city, despite the socialism.
Literally 728, so, like, Woo. Do it.
We're safe.
Thank you all.